Well, cold weather can be used as an excuse to do less, but when it comes to inspecting your home, winter's a good time to do more. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Home improvement expert John Freiberger back with us. He's a registered home inspector, specializes in designing air barrier systems that reduce energy consumption. And glad to have him back to talk with you about keeping your energy costs down in winter, among other things. We can talk about, I'm sure, snow melt and condensation. So how do you manage energy consumption in the colder months? What's on your mind? You have questions for John? Give a call. Number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. John, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
So when it comes to heating our home, anything at this stage of the winter we should be looking at or looking for?
Well, the winter changes everything, Larry, and it really gives us some opportunities that we don't have in the summer.
Yeah.
So that's why I suggested that we may want to talk about winter opportunities for homeowners to really take a look at their own home. Because what we're going to use is we're going to use cold as cold causes your house to do things that heat doesn't in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And if we read the evidence that cold leaves in our house, we can get some ideas about how our envelope on our house is performing. By envelope, I mean the air barrier and the thermal barrier. So the things that keep the air from leaving the house or coming into the house, and the things that stop heat from just radiating out. So this is something that in the summer, it's difficult even for the people we always recommend, Larry, the people who are doing the energy inspections. But in the winter, the homeowner can actually learn a lot about their house if they just know where to look.
All right. Where do we look?
Well, so what does cold do? Right? What does cold do?
It goes down.
Well, yeah, the temperatures go down. And in areas in our house that are colder, okay, so we're sitting in a nice studio here. It's probably 40% humidity. It's 70 degrees, right?
Yep.
If we turn the AC on in here and it drops to 45 degrees in here, our humidity is going to go way up. And that's what's happening in our houses in the winter is when the temperature is going down, the same amount of water vapor that we have in the air inside our house, if that same amount of water vapor is in the basement or the attic where it's colder, we start seeing the effects of that, and we're going to see that in condensation.
Yeah.
Now, everybody in Wisconsin, Larry, sees it on their windows, unless they've got the most expensive windows in the world. When it gets this kind of temperature, everybody in Wisconsin looks at their windows, and you see the beads of sweat, the condensation on the windows. Well, on the windows, it causes a little damage. You know, it can get a little bit of mold, ruins the finish a little bit. But if we look up in our attic, which is the first place that people should look. Now, Larry, we got to say, assuming it's safe.
Yeah, don't go walking between the...
Don't take the dining room chair and put a cracker box on top of it and try to look up in the attic. You know, and if you're unsteady or anything else, you know, have your son-in-law do it. But if you can safely access your attic and look at it, a day like today is perfect because it is really cold. And if there's any kind of moisture issue in your attic due to air leaving your house and poor venting, you are going to see it today.
Now, how will it look?
Well, if you're real lucky, all you're going to see is where those nails come through the sheathing. Metal obviously moves heat quicker.
Yep.
So the nails are going to be the coldest thing in the attic. So they're going to be what's called the first condensing surface. In other words, the first thing that water will condense out on. So we might look at the nails. We might see all this little frost around the nail tips. Well, that may not even be a problem. So now just look around the nail tips. How far does that frost go? Now, if that frost goes out a ways and there's all these gray marks around the nail tips, even that's not terribly bad. But now you start seeing sheets of frost on the underside of your sheathing, you need to start thinking about what's going on. Now look around. Look towards where your bathroom is. If most of the attic looks pretty good, just a little bit of frost on the nails, and then there's this massive condensation, frozen, you know, frost above your bathroom, that tells you something.
Yeah.
Either tells you don't have a bath fan, which you should have, or you've got a bath fan and it's leaking badly, or the bath fan duct doesn't exist, and it's not in the attic. So simply by looking in the attic, we can tell if we've got excess moisture. Now, if you look in the attic, you're seeing all kinds of stuff that looks sort of black and gray and white that isn't frost. Then your attic's been having condensation problems for some time. You've actually got some fungal growth up there, and you really need to get serious.
And by serious, we need to do some, get somebody in to look?
Right, exactly, Larry. As we always recommend, we want to go to Focus on Energy and find an energy analyst, because what you're going to be able to tell as a homeowner, Larry, is how are you, you're getting a bunch of moisture in your attic. That we know because it's condensing out. Now, moisture is coming into the attic because air is coming into the attic. Now, in the winter, this is why everything's different in the winter, Larry. In the summer, when it's 100 degrees outside and 70 degrees in your house, there's not a lot of air buoyancy. But in the winter, you can think of your house, your 70-degree house where it's 8 above outside, is a really heavy hot air balloon. All the air in that house is trying to go upwards and carry your balloon up, but your balloon won't move. So what's happening is every place there's a little crack around the, you know, in older houses there's cracks everywhere.
Yeah.
Around the switches, the outlets, the top of the wall plates, the soffits, around the old recessed light fixtures from the 1950s that leak like mad. All of that warm air is going up into the attic and is carrying that moisture from the house up there. So what we need to do is go to Focus on Energy. We need to hire the man or woman who does the pressure door test, where they depressurize your house to 50 pascals. They can measure, because they have a calibrated fan, how leaky your house is. And then they will give you some nice instructions that they'll print out. And most of them will even calculate how much money you're likely to save on your heating and your air conditioning by doing the air sealing and by improving the insulation.
That's really a good deal. And in the wintertime, it is fun to go outside with the person doing the testing.
Well, it is, yes.
And look at the at the colors on the screen that they have,
right,
showing air, where the air is coming out.
Yeah, the thermal cameras. I've got one that I use in home inspections, but I do not pretend to be doing full energy analysis. I looked at a house yesterday, and it had all been insulated. And one bedroom, I found two completely vacant stud spaces. Oh. I looked outside. That's where the chimney was. They couldn't reach it.
Oh.
So you can learn a lot about your house and the thermal imaging. And as you point out, in the winter, 70 inside, 8 outside, you get some fantastic pictures.
Yeah.
And your energy analyst will print those out for you, ask for them in color instead of black and white. It'll tell you where the air leaks are around the windows, the sill boxes in the basement, it tells you just an amazing amount for... I've seen, somebody told me, Larry, that some of these are now subsidized, and sometimes you get energy analysis for as low as $200. I mean, usually I think, you know, $400 to $500. But if you look in your attic and we have an issue up there that might, you know, long term, if you've got plywood or oriented strand board or anything like that in the attic and gets wet again and again and again, not only are we going to get fungal growth, but that material is actually going to deteriorate. So you think of spending $400 for an energy analysis versus, you know, $5,000 to replace all the sheathing on your roof. The energy analysis is a pretty darn good deal. Right.
There we go. Well, we have some callers online with questions for you, so let's take some calls. Open line for you at 1-800-642-1234. If you want to join in, or you can email at ideas@wpr.org. Gary is in Illinois. We'll give you a chance. Hi, Gary.
Hey, Larry. Good morning to you guys.
Morning.
My question is about ductless heating and air conditioning units. I think they're called mini splits or something. How are they comparatively cost to install and energy efficient to run?
Well, like everything, you can get different efficiency ratings on them. And so you need to check to see whether it's a Mitsubishi or whatever, what is the quality of it, and what is the seasonal energy efficiency rating on that particular unit. I believe that the SEER-12 is the lowest energy one that you can sell in the United States now, but I could be wrong about that. But usually we look at SEER-14, SEER-16 as being a good energy saver. And the cost to operate them, there's two factors. One is that energy efficiency is, to what extent are you changing electricity into BTUs of cooling. But the other thing is, what about your house? So if your house is really leaky or is poorly insulated, or if you have old-fashioned, a lot of southern windows without heat shield, the energy efficiency of the mini-split may not make a lot of difference, because the dynamics of your house are such that you're just going to have to cool an awful lot more than if your house were really in good shape. Now, in the summer, we have the same we have air infiltration in the summer as well, even though we don't have the air buoyancy thing. But if you're in an older house, Gary, and your windows leak and your sill boxes leak, then you're going to be spending more on air conditioning, because you're going to be air conditioning a lot of outside air coming in.
Yeah, my daughter is looking at a two-flat in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's actually where I'm driving now to meet up with the home inspector. And I heard you guys come on. And it has no ducting. It's a 120-year-old two-flat.
Mm-hmm.
It's got newer windows. I mean, I know it needs insulation, some different stuff, obviously. But it has no ducts. It just has heaters on the wall.
Yeah, it's got an old-fashioned boiler system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even boiler. No. This is like gas-fired. It's like what you would find in a cabin up north.
Oh, wall packs. Good heavens.
Oh.
Yes,
man.
They're all over down here. The number that I ran into looking at two flats with her surprised the heck out of me. I thought those were just for like little cabins up north, but obviously not back in the day around Chicago.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things to perhaps take a look at then. One of the things that Focus on Energy in Wisconsin is pushing is electric heat pumps, which are now are good down to like 15 below zero or something. Of course, Chicago's a little bit warmer. So rather than just looking at putting in a mini split to do the air conditioning, why don't we take a look at perhaps putting in a heat pump that will do both the air conditioning and the heat? So start with your building inspector. Illinois has pretty good licensing and education requirements for home inspectors. And so talk to him about it a little bit, him or her, and see if they have some advice. And then perhaps that inspector, since they're local and you're driving down there from some other place, has some ideas of maybe some mechanical contractors down there you could talk to. And I do not know what is available in the state of Illinois for energy efficiency rebates like we have here in Wisconsin. I suspect there's something. But you always want to check to see if there are some rebates, if there's something coming through your local utility, because what you've got in there is a horribly inefficient old system. So you may find that there's some rebates available, and that going to an electric heat pump system for heating and cooling is in the long term going to be a really good investment for you.
Yeah, makes some sense. Gary, thanks. Good luck with
thanks
your
for the help, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Bob in Bear Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi,
thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a question about attic ventilation. I have a home built in the late 80s with about an 812 pitch roof. We have a continuous core of vent, ridge vent, and soffit vents that put in. I also have a gable vent, louvered vent, and I've had snow blow in on the louvered vent. I have to replace one of them because it's deteriorating, and I have it. I could put the new one in and just make it aesthetic and just put plywood on the back of it so it's non-functional. I'm just wondering what the recommendation would be there.
You're probably going to need to do a little bit of calculation. It is fine to have more soffit venting as far as the net opening for incoming air than it is for the upper opening. Now, it could be you've got CoreVent for ridge vent, and CoreVent is one of the best products out there, so it's very efficient. Plus, you got these gable vents. So you've got a lot of air leaving your attic. The question is, when all that air is leaving the attic, does enough come in through the soffit, or does your attic develop lower pressure than your house so it's pulling air up from the house? So I think that what you may find is you'll have to take a look at the core vent and see for lineal foot what the net square opening is. You'll have to look up the soffit venting. And if there's more upper venting, including the gable vents, than lower venting, then it's a really good idea to go ahead and replace those gable vents with a non-vent. And so I think you're headed in the correct direction there, Bob.
Yeah, there you go, Bob. Good luck. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it. Mario in Oconomowoc, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I got my attic is real, like, it's got a lot of moisture. And I heard that I could put a vintage machine up there that'll suck out the moisture and suck all that water out of there.
Maybe. Mario, how old is your house?
I think it was built in 1970s.
1970, 50s. Okay. 1970 is the dark ages before building science. We built a lot of houses in the 70s where we wanted to really increase the energy efficiency because we had the 1972 oil embargo.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a lot of things to houses in the 70s that were wrong. And what you're probably going to need to do is to check the amount of venting that you have in the attic. Now, on a house from that period, the best upper venting to have is really the ridge venting because it's at the top of the roof, right? It's where the warmest air is, so the air is going to go out. But the air that goes out, you also have to replace with venting in the soffit. Now, do you have soffit vents on your house, Mario? If you look up at the overhang, do you see vents down there?
You know, I don't, and that was one of the things that concerned me. So I'm thinking of going like every 5 feet when I decide to do my roof again.
Mario, is it a plywood soffit?
No, it's wood.
It's wood. Okay, so it's solid wood?
Solid wood.
Solid wood, okay. I think that what you may find is that you can actually get somebody with one of these. I've got these little, like, 3-inch blades electric skill saws. And what we've done with plywood and wood soffits is we've basically ripped, you know, very carefully mark it, but then we simply cut a long channel in the soffit, and then the contractor can install soffit venting. And then up in the attic, we have to make sure we have insulation dams and chutes so the air that's coming into the soffit can actually get into the attic. So I would talk to a local contractor who's maybe done this before and say, can you come in and retrofit these wood soffits? Now, somebody mentioned CoreVent. I think it was maybe Gary or Bob. It was Bob. And CoreVent, you can go to their website and take a look at their venting materials, and they make materials both for soffits and for ridge vents and a lot of different companies. If you go to your local ABC or your local lumber yard, they will show you all kinds of soffit venting. The problem with fans is that where is the air coming from? So if you put a fan in your attic and it's blowing out and depressurizing the attic, what it may do is draw a whole lot of warm, wet air up from inside your house. And so your attic is going to get wetter, plus you're running a fan. So let's try to do it with natural convection. So talk to a contractor and see if you can retrofit that 70s house.
And good luck, Mario. Thank you so much for calling. Taking a look at your home today with John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, his business Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg. I'm Larry Mueller. Jana Rose Schleiss, our on-air producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Home improvement today. Winter is a good time to inspect your home, says John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates. He's our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in. One open line at 800-642-1234. You can always email us at ideas@wpr.org. And we'll go right back to the phones. And Dan in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I have a couple questions. First is I have a 120-year-old wood frame house here in La Crosse, and I want to really do a pretty serious renovation on it and re-insulate it. I'm wondering if you have any familiarity with exterior insulation. I have to take the siding off and replace it as it is. So I've read about that technique, and a lot of people use foam, but some people are using mineral wool these days, apparently. So
that's
I wondered
correct.
If you had any experience with that.
I do have some experience with mineral wool, and it is a superior product. The issue that you run into, Dan, of course, is always expense. So what we're really looking at now, you have an old house, right? So you're probably a balloon-framed house, 120 years old. So basically, the nails and the sheathing on the exterior of that house are what really is giving you your structural stability. Like, you probably don't have headers above your windows and doors. The house is relying upon the sheathing for all of its stability. If you take a look at the Department of Interior guidelines for historic restoration, you'll find that you are not allowed to insulate a historic house, an old house, unless you install a complete vapor barrier on the interior. And the reason is this, that once you put the mineral wool in the wall in the stud space, the first condensing surface is going to be the backside of that sheathing. So you're not going to see it, but you're going to have frost in your walls and the backside of the sheathing. That's where the nails are. And then the nails rust, and then suddenly your house starts racking in the wind. So we have to be really careful. So your idea of going outside is really a good one. The Cold Climate Housing Lab, and you can find them online and look at all of their various articles, has really suggested that for climates like Wisconsin, that we put at least 60% of our wall insulation outside the studs and outside the sheathing, and which is, this is what you're looking at doing. But if we want, depending upon how much insulation you want in your wall, but if you have, let's say you want an R20 wall, then you're going to have R12 on the exterior, which is 2 inches of foam. I don't believe that the mineral wool, I actually have it here someplace, but offhand I can't remember what the R value per inch of the mineral wool is. But the nice thing about the mineral wool, it is denser. If it isn't a lot more expensive, I think your use of it is probably a really good idea. But I would look at 2 to 2.5 inches on the outside, a little bit of insulation on the inside of the walls, or if you wish, you could put all of it on the outside and go with 3 inches.
Yeah, why not? Kind of screw. Well, go ahead. The expense part,
like you were saying.
the expense part is.
It's going to be a huge project. That's the only thing, right? Well, the good thing is this house is, it's a 4-square. You know, it's very simple. The shape is simple. You know, it's not like a lot of, Victorian with a lot of little angles and things like that. So. That's kind of working in my favor, I guess.
Yeah. I've got a 4-square and about the same age as yours, Dan. And it is a fairly simple design.
Yeah, I'm kind of a simple guy. So,
well, Dan, just to complicate your simple life at this point, before you do this, I want you to think about it a little bit and try to just sketch up a cross section of your walls. You know, you can get that 1/4-inch grid paper. That's really great for drawing on. Because what you want to make sure of, let's say you add this outside insulation, you add a couple of inches, but then the windows are set back over the stud space, well, then your line of insulation's got these jogs in it, right? Where we've got cold, we've got cold windows. So if we do this, you may have to think long-term about actually moving the windows out so that your thermal barrier is all in exactly the same plane. So think about that a little bit, too. You may have to talk to a consultant, somebody from Focus on Energy or somebody who simply does design work, but you're going to be making a huge improvement in this house. You're going to have a gigantic savings in your utility bills over the years. So make sure that you're thinking about the entire thermal barrier and air barrier before you go ahead and do the work. So spend a little money on planning, and it's probably going to pay you back really well with reduced energy costs.
Yep. Focus on Energy would be a good place to go for.
I think so. I'm not sure how much design work they actually do, but a lot of people, it's fairly easy to do design work. In fact, you can even really go online and read building science articles, and it'll show you how basically take a red pen, draw your wall section, take a red pen, trace the thermal barriers. And if there's places where they don't meet, then you have to redesign.
Kind of to go along with this a bit, I think, Aaron emailed to say that they have an older home and they have an old boiler. The boiler runs on oil and costs them $400 to $500 a month during the winter months. He wonders if propane or oil is more efficient. Does efficiency automatically equal less energy costs? Should we do an energy test, or just assume it's time to replace the boiler?
Well,
maybe both.
Well, one of the big question that I would ask Aaron is: this a hot water or a steam system? Because there's really big differences, Larry. The steam systems, we do not have residential steam condensing boilers yet. Hot water boilers now are wonderful. The condensing boilers will run 96, some even 98% efficiency. So if we're on a boiler out in the country and we have expensive oil or expensive propane, I would take a look at the cost of putting in a condensing hot water boiler. Now, with steam boiler, you're going to have to take a look at your cost per BTU. I don't think there's going to be a huge savings versus oil versus propane. What you really need to do there is to tighten up your house. Have an energy inspector come in, figure out your heat loss, and reduce the heat loss, because the fewer BTUs you have to burn, the less oil or propane you're burning.
Yeah, makes good sense. Anne in Franklin, your turn. Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind today, Anne?
Yes, hi there. I am wondering, thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering if there is, we've had Focus on Energy come out to the house. We had Great Spray Foam guy come out and do a lot of work. And we have a new furnace with a whole house dehumidifier because we're in a floodplain. Mm-hmm. And it's got some little UV light that's supposed to clean the air and make it like HEPA hospital-y or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, as we can take well water and have it tested, is there a way to take the air in the home and have it tested for allergens and black mold and all the scary things that would keep you awake at night?
Yes, absolutely. I don't have a person to recommend to you in your area, but if you simply look, I think if you Google indoor air testing, and you'll find everybody from industrial hygienists that are going to cost you a small fortune down to people who come in. And what they're going to do, Anne, is they're going to have this little air pump, and they're going to pump a certain calibrated amount of air through a filter. Then they're going to send that filter into Hughes Labs or someplace else, and Hughes is going to give you spore counts and things like that. And that will give you some good information. Often, I've seen those air tests maybe in the $400 to $600 range, including the lab work from a good reputable lab. So I would Google that, and I'm pretty sure that you will find somebody in your area that is doing it, because it's really a big concern with people. As we talked about earlier, the housing changes we made in 1970 have made our houses much more moldy. So there are a lot of people out there with problems, so there are a lot of people who are professionally trying to help them.
Hmm. There you go, Ann. Thank you very much for calling. Mark in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm getting a roof this summer, and I have a question about venting. I got a two-story house. It's a very simple roof, angles up from both the east and the west side to a peak.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way the house is constructed, there's no soffit venting. And it's been recommended that in addition to the ridge vent, that they put in what they're calling edge vents about 4 feet up on each side from the soffit.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, in your opinion, is that a good thing to do?
It's, sometimes you do what you can do. You sort of drive on the flat tire because you don't have a spare. Edge vents do work. They have a certain number of problems. How high, how tall is the attic in your house, Mark?
In the middle, I would say it's about 8 to 9 feet.
Okay,
and then it's
that's great.
Down to nothing.
Right. And is this, do you have slope ceilings on your second floor bedrooms?
No.
Wonderful. You got straight walls. All right. So I think that what you should take a look at is putting in, you've got two gables, you have a single ridge roof, is I think what you're explaining to me. Take a look at putting in some attractive ridge vents on each end of the house. And you'd want to size those ridge vents to at least equal the net opening of the ridge vent. And then you want the bottom of that ridge vent to basically stop where your insulation stops. So if you've got 12 inches of insulation or 18 inches of insulation in your attic, then that is the spot where the bottom of your gable vent would be. So that is going to be your incoming air. That's the lowest spot in the attic. And you're not going to have to worry about ice dam backup or snow blowing in or anything like it on the edge vents. And hopefully you have a house where aesthetically you can find something. You know, they make them square, they make them round, they make them triangular, they make them octagon, they make them everything. So I would perhaps talk to a contractor on that, and you can look online if you just Google gable vents. you'll find a plethora of people that are making it in wood, they're making it in various PVCs, and I think that would probably be the best way to go.
All right.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. And on to Dave in Rhinelander. Hi, Dave.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything I can do about it. I've got a about a 1971-72 Wausau prefab home. And I've got heat loss, I've got a ridge vent, and I've got soffit vents. I don't know how construction was done back then, because I'm not sure where you're getting air movement through the roof. There's obviously no attic. But I've got heat loss along the ridge vent, and I'm wondering if there's a way. I mean, I used to get, until I had siding and insulation put on the outside, I got bats and flying squirrels coming in through the end by the chimney and then coming into the middle of the house. So there's got to be space up there.
Yeah, there
where
is.
There's air movement. How do you handle that?
Dave, how old's your roof? How old are the shingles?
Oh, 15.
Okay, and are they a 3-in-1 tab or a laminated?
3-in-1.
Good. Okay, so they're within a few years of the end of their life. So what I want you to think about is have a plan when you re-roof. You're going to be able to access that little attic from above. And what I've looked at a lot of these homes over the years, a lot of Wausau homes and other manufactured homes over the years. And basically what you've got is you've got fiberglass batting down there, and you've got just a slew of air leaks. And what I'd suggest you think about is you're going to end up taking most of the sheathing off the roof, and you're probably going to find a bunch of that sheathing is damaged anyway, because it has gotten moisture on it over the years from all the air leaks coming up from your house. So plan to get rid of all the insulation that's up there and then go with the spray foam system. That is going to stop all of the air leakage out of your Wausau home and is going to probably quadruple the insulation. You may have an astonishing change in your utility bill. Now, if you are in an area, Dave, where your utility is participating in Focus on Energy, because there are some rural cooperatives and things that don't, you want to take a look and see what you can get for rebates. If you have a 30 to 40% reduction on the heat loss of this Wausau home, you may be able to get as much as $2,000 from Focus on Energy for doing this work. And that, you know, that this is not going to be a cheap thing to do. So do check to see what's around there for rebates. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've got a I'm hoping to actually put it on the market in a couple years, if not this year. Is there anything I can do without going through all that, something from inside where I could have, like, drill holes and have that expanding foam put in there?
I think that you may do more damage than good. I would leave it as is and make sure when you fill in your real estate condition report to sell it, say that you do seem to have heat loss, and you may just want to suggest that. And the roof looks like it's got another 2-3 years, but consider doing what you heard on Larry's program. Just take it off and spray foam from above and make it into a really tight house. So you've already done the exterior, so that would give a real nice, efficient house for somebody up in the colder parts of Wisconsin.
Yeah, especially Rhinelander is not always warm.
No, it isn't.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Jim in Osceola, your turn. Hi, Jim. We lose Jim? Well, if we did, we'll go to Rick in Madison. Rick, hello. Oh, well, we're suddenly having all kinds of problems here. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
We have it's a triple window. It's a casement window. So in the center is the stationary window. Then on each side is the casement that opens up. And on the inside, not on the inside, not in between the glass, it's a high efficiency window, and it's about 20 to 25 years old. And on the inside of the room, not inside the glass itself, on one of the casements, we get a moisture forming, like kind of in a circle in the middle of the window. And, you know, typically if you have a lot of moisture, you get it running down the sides mm-hmm. or along the bottom of the window. Mm-hmm. This, and if you wipe this, if you wipe this window down, you can actually see the fog reform on this. And I'm wondering, I actually took a temperature of the window. I, you know, I tried to insulate. I have a thermometer I could get mm-hmm. onto the window. And it actually, when it was cold, it was actually registering 10 degrees colder than the other window, which is just, you know, just a few feet over
right,
on
right.
the center of the window. And I'm wondering, with a gas, say if it's gas charged, mm-hmm. if it's lost the gas, it doesn't fog in the inside, you know, between the glass. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that the gas being gone from the window makes that window cold enough that it does that?
It would, but the pattern that you have is indicative of a problem that I've seen in windows, and it is really weird. I've seen windows where they have taken all the air out and not put in enough gas. And what happens is it actually bends the panes of gas, of glass, together so that they sometimes even touch in the middle of the window. And usually it's in an oval shape if it's a casement. I'm trying to remember the name of the manufacturer. I had a bunch of these in Rockford where every window in the house was wrong. They simply had, it was almost like they had a too much of a vacuum between the panes of glass, and it sucked the glass together, so you really didn't have the airspace and the gas in this oval part towards the center of the window. So it's a little hard to see. Actually, the window guys have got a special light they use for looking at it. I usually put my finger up to it, and I can actually get pictures of these window problems. So take a look at that. If that is the case, then you simply have that particular sealed unit replaced with one that hasn't been, let's call it, over-evacuated so that it's actually bent the glass panels inwards towards each other. Does that make sense?
Somebody actually came and looked at it, and that's what he thought, too, that maybe it was the glass was touching. You know, mm-hmm. internally, you can't see it. Even looking, you don't see that. But that's kind of – and that could happen. That was just happened this year now after 20-some years. So –
it's odd that that would just happen. The ones that I've seen have all been defects when new, but it is possible. It's certainly I've certainly seen that. So if it sounds as if the person who gave you advice is probably credible, it's certainly not a terribly unusual circumstance.
So it would be changing that casement itself.
Exactly. You can just you can take it to take it to one of your local glass guys. Well, you're in Madison, Rick, so you've got Cardinal and Martin. You've got all kinds of people here who are going to be able to take care of that glass for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's mainly meaning changing the whole casement, right? Because I do have the model number of it, but just the casement.
It doesn't. You don't have to change all the frame. You can just change the glass.
Just the glass?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They take the glass out of the frame I have, you mean?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, unless it's a really inexpensive window, but like Colby & Colby, Pella's, Marvin's, on all of those, Weathershield, Heard, I think, has disappeared. But on most of them, you'll find – call the local guys in Madison, and they're going to be able to give you good advice. They've been doing this literally for 100 years.
Yeah. I had some Martin Glass, I had some work. They did some work for me, and they did a wonderful job. And
that's
there
right.
are other good ones.
Yeah,
too.
Brunke has done this. There's all kinds of people
kinds
in Madison.
Yep. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate the call. John Freiberger, our guest today. His firm is Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your home during the winter season, what needs improving? Our guest today, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. Questions, give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Jim in Osceola now. Jim, thank you for calling.
Hello.
Hi, Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am. I have a quick question about ice dam development on my roof. I've got a home that was constructed in 1978. A few years ago, we replaced the shingles on the roof. While we were doing that, we took the old square attic vents and sealed those off and replaced those with ridge vents.
Mm-hmm.
The last two winters now, we've seen very heavy ice dam development on the edge of the roof line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's a correlation between the roof vent being changed to a ridge rather than the old square attic vents.
Possibly. Yeah, possibly. Mm-hmm. I think you may have hit upon it, Jim. So you've got high-efficiency venting up there, so you've got a lot of air leaving high in that attic. So the question is, where's that air now? Where's the incoming air coming from? So you're going to have to check your soffit vents. What you can do is you can get up in the attic if you can, or at least poke your head up there and see if you've got some daylight coming into your attic. See if there are chutes there in insulation dams. Is it possible that the insulation has gotten down into the soffit vents? Is it possible that there's no chutes and that that air is blocked off? Because if it is, Jim, what's going to happen is you're getting low pressure area in your attic, and that is pulling air up from your house. It's pulling warm air up from your house. So if we don't have cold incoming air coming, if we're replacing warmish air with warm air, what's going to happen is we're going to get a lot of ice dams. Now, it's possible that what happened is that, you know, the vibrations of the roofing being done and things, that something happened to limit the airflow up from your soffit vents. I'm assuming you've got soffit vents, Jim. Is that correct? 1978, I would think so.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
I know there are no chutes, and we do have blown insulation up there.
Okay, that's your problem. You're going to have to get an insulation contractor in there to rake back that insulation, put in chutes and insulation dams, and that should take care of your problem. Now, how much insulation do you have in that attic?
I'm not certain. I know the rafters are covered a couple of inches, so
mm-hmm.
it's probably 10 inches.
Are these trusses?
Yes.
Okay, so it's only a 2x4 on the bottom, and if there's 2 inches, it might only be 4 or 5 inches up there. I'm going to suggest that you go to Focus on Energy and have an energy inspection done. Here's the reason. I'm a little concerned, because of your ice dams, that you've got very bad air sealing on your ceilings in the house. And one way of air sealing, if you don't have a lot of insulation, is you suck out all of the old insulation. They bring a giant vacuum truck in 2 hours to take everything out of your attic. And then you come up and you put 1 inch or 2 inches of spray foam over the entire attic floor, which completely seals everything. So that way your house can no longer leak air into the attic, and then you put the chutes in, the air dams, and insulate it, and you can then make your attic perform better than a brand new house. So I would spend the $200 to $500, whatever it takes, to have some energy analysis done and make sure you explain, as you did to us, exactly what your problem is. And I think that they're going to come up with a good design for you to not only get rid of the air dams, but maybe reduce your energy costs.
Yeah.
Right. All right. That sounds good. We'll give that a try.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Ruth in Chippewa Falls. Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you today?
I just put new windows in, and I noticed that I have condensation at the bottom of the window with ice.
Mm-hmm.
Is that normal?
Ruth, let me ask you a couple of questions first. What type of windows did you put in?
I have a plate glass, you know, double whatever,
mm-hmm.
in the center, and then I have two crankouts on the side.
Mm-hmm. And what is the frame? Is it wood? Is it metal? Is it vinyl?
It's composite.
A composite. Okay. So,
yeah.
So it's basically a plastic type. Does it have a thermal break? Probably not. Do you know the name of the manufacturer?
Anderson.
It is an Anderson. Okay.
Oh. Yeah.
Renewal?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a tough question then. Part of it is the renewals are a very decent replacement window. I'm not sure exactly what they're using for a thermal paint in there. If they're using just a plain old, you know, dual piece of glass, you've got a U rating of 0.48 and you've got an R value of 2, which isn't very much. And I suspect that that is what is in there. And with that glass, yes, you're going to get condensation, and it is going to be around the outside edges because the glass is coldest at the outside edges. It's warmer in the middle. So it gives us an opportunity, Larry, I think, to when we talk to people about when they're replacing their windows, is to really ask a lot of questions and ask what is the performance of this glass, because there's a 400% difference between a plain old thermal pane and something like an HS6 C270 glass. And if we're in northern Wisconsin, you know, Chippewa Falls or Rhineland or Eagle River, places like that, it may be worth it to go with the better glass. You know, we get our walls insulated sometimes to R26, and then we put an R2 window in with a whole bunch of windows. And it's like, what have we really done to the total R value of our outside wall? Well, it's not terribly good. So we always want to really do some research before we start investing in windows. So, Ruth, what you probably have is a perfectly acceptable window. The Andersons probably meet the Energy Star rating, but the Energy Star rating is pretty low in Wisconsin. It's a lot lower than I'd like to see it for windows. So what you have is probably perfectly acceptable, put in correctly, and the condensation, I'm afraid, is normal.
Oh. Okay.
So I'm stuck with it.
You are stuck with it, yes. But, you know, it's not going to be there during June through August.
That's for sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruth.
Might be on the outside if the house is well air-conditioned. It's hot in northern Wisconsin.
Oh, there you go, Ruth. Thank you so much. Well, Dick in Algoma, we're turning to you next. Hi, Dick.
Hello. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
I've got a nice two-story home. It's a rental. And I'm putting a new roof on it. And my contractor has talked to me about they don't use tar paper anymore, 15 weight or 30 weight. They use a synthetic paper now. I'm a little confused as to what that is.
Well, yeah, it is indeed a synthetic problem. The problem we have, tar paper is wonderful stuff. Yeah. I mean, we've been using it for 150 years. It's great stuff. The only problem is if you put it on your roof and it rains, it crinkles, and you never get the crinkles out, and then your shingles look funny. So people have really – they're trying to find other things that work, and there's multiple companies now that make roof underlayment. So what you want to do is ask your roofer, what do you use? Is it a GAF product? Is it a – I'm trying to remember all the different products. There's so many products out there. But ask him what he's using, and then go online to the manufacturer and look at all of the properties and see what they have on it for warranty, and also download the installation instructions. So just ask him what he plans to use. Most likely, if he's a halfway competent roofer, and I assume he is, it is actually going to be something better than tar paper, as good as tar paper is. But do a little bit of research, as we always say. Go online. All of these companies really do a great job on their websites of telling you what you're buying and what you should be able to expect.
And I like the advice you give about download the instructions for installing and then hand them to the...
That's right. I usually say that, don't I? Now, roofers generally are pretty competent. I've run into some really bad ones, but... roofers generally are really pretty good because if they don't do it right, they hear about it really soon. But that is always good advice, Larry, is make sure if they know that you've researched this, they're going to be just really careful. But when you hand them things, be sure to smile sweetly.
Here, do it this way.
Right.
Please.
Please.
Oh, man.
Let's work together on this.
Yes. Norman Wausau, you're on now. What's on your mind?
Hello. I'd like to ask your guest there what his thoughts are on the utility of using asphalt shingles versus putting on a metal roof when I put a new roof on. And one of the concerns I have is we have a combination furnace that uses wood and oil, so we have a chimney that goes up through it. And how would I get up to clean the chimney if I put the metal roof on? And what are the relative value of one versus the other? I understand that the metal roof probably is going to cost twice as much, but will last twice as long as the asphalt roof.
Well, you can now get an asphalt roof from GAF, which will last an entire lifetime. So that means the metal roof's going to have to last two of your lifetimes, isn't it? So there are great asphalt shingles out there now. And on a GAF roof, if you use a GAF certified contractor and you pay a small insurance policy, it's a couple $100, you are covered not only for the material but for the labor for your lifetime. So I think that asphalt shingles in many cases are about as good as a metal roof. With metal roofs in northern climates, we have things like snow slides. Yeah. So you're going to have to put snow catchers and things on them. I have seen them with integral ladders so you can get up to clean the chimney, because if you're burning wood, you've got to get up and look at that chimney once a year. So, again, let's do some research. Maybe go to GAF, take a look at their products, talk to a GAF roofer.
And there you
go. And the metal roof better be a standing seam, hidden fastener roof, not one of these cheap ones with surface fasteners.
And we are going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back with John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Fitchburg and Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at home improvement during the wintertime with our guest, John Freiberger of Freiberger and Associates of Madison. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating all kinds of structures. He specializes a bit in the older ones, and it's always fun to have him with us. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Ruth, you know, we were talking about ice jams a bit ago, and Ruth Ann from northern Wisconsin emailed, like to replace their roof this summer. Their home is 13 years old, and this winter they've had ice problems. You know, they're getting up to in age, and they don't want to be crawling around on the roof with a ladder to shovel off snow. Any recommendations for what they should be looking for?
Yes, well, when we have ice dams, it's because we've got heat. We have heat in the attic, as we said, for two reasons. We have either radiant loss because we don't have enough insulation, or we have a lot of air moving into the roof. When we get to older houses, and 18 isn't particularly old, but you know the guy may have built an old-fashioned way. Larry, older houses, generally about 40% of the heat loss is air movement, which is really a lot.
Yeah.
So if we air seal our attic, we can really look at reducing heat loss significantly. So I think what Ann needs to do is, again, I think she has an opportunity here to really do some significant work, and maybe air sealing is part of it. So having somebody from Focus on Energy, or that not necessarily from Focus on Energy, but an energy inspector, and we go to Focus on Energy to find them, is having someone come in and take a look at her house so that we may want to improve the venting, we may want to do some air sealing, we may want to add insulation, but they should be able to come and analyze this for her, give her a rough idea of what it's going to cost in her neighborhood and how much money she is going to save on it.
Let's go to Carl in Eagle River. Hi, Carl.
Yes, we have an old farmhouse we just purchased in December, and we have terrible ice dams. There's no soffits on this structure, and I need to know how exactly do I put the insulation in, since I don't have to worry about soffit vents and such. Mm-hmm. Do I just blow insulation in there? I can't move around in there, so I have to blow it.
Right. Yeah, well, here's the problem. If you have an old farmhouse, it probably had wood shingles when it was built, and wood shingles were self-venting. You may remember the old carpenter's pencils that were sort of narrow and fat at the same time. When you do a wood shingle, you take the narrow part of the shingle, narrow part of the pencil, put it next to the shingle, and put the next shingle next to that. So all wood shingles are gap 3/8 of an inch. So the hot air went out between the upper shingles, the cold air became in between the lower shingles. And these houses didn't have to have soffit vents or soffits because the shingles were actually the roof vents. So now we end up with a situation where we have no soffits to vent. So we talked earlier about possibly putting in gable vents, but if it's a four square, you can't do that. You can put in the edge vents, and those are probably better than trying to put pot vents here and there on the roof. So you're going to need to probably talk to a contractor who is fairly intelligent, but we want to make sure that we get some sort of airflow out of that attic to get warm air out. The other thing to take a look at, if it's an old farmhouse, it probably meets that 40% standard that Larry and I just talked about, that 40% of your heat loss is air going up into that attic. So you may want to talk to, if you can find a good insulation contractor in your area, talk to them about evacuating that insulation and trying to spray foam. Now, if it's a little tiny attic, that's going to be difficult. But find a professional that you have some faith in, maybe talk to two or three, and one of them is going to impress you as the smartest, you know, the smartest guy in the room, and take his direction. Also, do a little bit of research online. Take a look at maybe the Cole Climate Housing Office website, Google ice dams, Google air sealing. Do a little bit of reading. All of this stuff is online, and surprisingly, most of the building science stuff is actually fairly reliable, unlike most of what you read on the Internet.
Yeah. So there you go. Good luck, Carl. Thank you for calling. Dennis in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Larry.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a 1980s A-frame house, and part of it is the ceiling is the entire A, so there's nothing I can do to change in insulation. But I also have it, part of the house is, has a knee wall to make a room or a loft. And I think that knee wall that I have right now is insulated improperly. They insulated both the joist and the wall, the roof joist, not the floor joist. So I seem to have a real problem with the house where it's 70 degrees upstairs in the second floor and it's 65 on the main level and it's 55 in the basement. Yeah. And I'm wondering, I'm thinking, I had some guy look at it one time and he told me that most of my heat's probably getting lost out of the floor joists above the knee wall. Mm-hmm. But that's a pretty hard thing to fix and determine because I'd have to rip up the floor and everything. Right. So I'm not sure the right way of doing it. If you could help me with that, that'd be great.
Now, Dennis, did you say that this is an A-frame?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. A-frames are just notorious for exfiltration problems.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, it's so tall. Yeah. And the higher they are, Larry, the more changes, you know, Dennis has explained, changes in temperature in his place. You get up to the point of that ceiling, if there's an air leak up there, that air up there is probably 80 degrees. So it's going out of the ridge like mad. What we have done with A-frames is we've put outside insulation on it. And how old is the roof on your house, Dennis?
2008.
Okay, unfortunately, it's new. Yeah, we've talked about Cornell panels. Cornell is now owned by Kurt Building Supplies, who I believe are still a Wisconsin public radio advertiser. But putting energy panels on the exterior on an A-frame is great because you seal off the air. So what you're probably going to have to do is have somebody come in, maybe thermal image in your house, Dennis. And it does indeed sound like you've analyzed this correctly. If they did not do the floor joists, we've probably got air coming up there, and that is simply working its way out. So this is a fairly complicated issue. We don't know how well your house was air sealed or insulated. So an energy inspection and some thermal imaging and maybe a blower door test is probably a good idea. And then figure out what you can do short term. And then also think about long term. And maybe it's going to be 10 or 15 years, but maybe at some point what we're going to have to do up there is go over the exterior of this with the Kurt-type panels. And it's K-U-R-T. You can look them up online. There's good information about them. But especially in northern Wisconsin, many places where we have propane, even these relatively, we won't call it expensive, we'll call it uncheap fixes, end up having a pretty good payback. So an energy consultant should be able to discuss both long-term and short-term fixes with you, tell you what the costs are likely to be, and also tell you what the savings are likely to be.
All right.
Make sense?
Yes, it does. Can you give me the name of that the panels again?
K-U-R-T. Go to Kurt Building Products. I believe it's Mike Cornell is the one who developed them here in northern Wisconsin for exactly this sort of use. You know, we got A-frames from the 1950s. They had almost no insulation in them.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to tear out the interiors and lower all the ceiling. So we went, okay, let's put things on the outside. And Kurt has a vented system, so you don't have a hot roof. So you can completely vent your roof, add the insulation, and air seal as you go. So it's a great product. We've used them on A-frames, mid-century modern cathedral ceiling houses. And I used a version of that even on a Frank Lloyd Wright house many years ago.
Oh. There
great.
You
thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. Jan in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Appreciate your call.
My question is, should I insulate my garage roof and the rafters versus the ceiling? The side walls are insulated, but not where the garage doors are.
Mm-hmm. It's attached house, a garage?
It's an attached garage, and then there's a breezeway, and then there's the house.
That doesn't sound like, unless you're running a woodworking shop in the garage and heating it, I'm not sure why you would actually spend the money to insulate it. I wonder if previous owner maybe thought they were going to do some winter work and we're going to put a little heater in there, we're going to insulate it and did the walls for some reason. So I don't see how that insulating your garage is going to affect your energy costs at all, Jan. How old is your house?
It was built in 92.
92, okay. So it's fairly modern as well.
Do they run heat? Is heat run out to the garage?
No, but my husband was a mailman, mm-hmm. and he would change tires and change the oil.
Okay.
And he would run a little heater.
Sure, a little electric temporary heater. And well, if he was still doing that or you're doing some hobby work, it doesn't cost that much to blow in insulation above a garage. One could certainly do that. But it is not going to affect your energy usage on the house.
All right. Thanks, okay. Jan. And Roger in Madison, hello to you.
Hi. I've got some additional comments about metal roofs I put a metal roof on both my garage and my house. And one of the main reasons that I did it on my house is that it allowed me to insulate directly underneath the roof, rather than having to put in a complicated ventilation system, which is required for shingles. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the warranty is like on these new super shingles you're talking about, but last time I looked, if you didn't ventilate your roof deck, your warranty was either dead or cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
Not a problem with none of this stuff is a problem with metal roofs, and you've got the insulation outside of the house on the roof deck, just like you were talking about insulating the sides of the house. I think that's a really superior roof system to anything that I understand you can do with shingles.
Well, the panels that we were just talking about actually are a ventilated panel. So you have probably just an isostandard sheets put down the metal roof over it. And the difference would be that this has got a bonded airspace and then an oriented strand board nailing space. So you can do exactly the same thing with a GAF shingle. And you are correct. A hot roof shingle is generally not warranted. But these energy panels that we talk from Kurt and from other companies making besides Kurt Supplies, I just happen to have, I've used those, so I mentioned
right.
them. Don't mean to plug them, but I have used them. But they do offer you the same opportunity, and you are looking at lower cost. Not everybody can really afford a good quality standing seam metal roof, and some people need to get up and clean their chimney.
One of the reasons why you were recommending it to the caller, because he didn't want to slip and fall down the...
Right, yes. Yeah. Now, I think metal roofs are fine. A well-installed metal roof, and it gets more difficult as you add more insulation because the fastener system, sometimes it's actually easier to fasten the systems that have oriented strand board on the top rather than just the pure isocyanderite. So sometimes the wind resistance you end up really with the same wind resistance, even though a metal roof correctly fashioned should have better wind resistance.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Roger. Appreciate it. Al in Kokana, your turn. Hi, Al.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I've got a manufactured home up at my land up north. It's actually my cabin, but we put a new roof on this summer. We used to have just some square roof fence along the roof. And when we put the new roof on this year, we put a ridge vent all the way, you know, down the middle of the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a big problem with ice dams this year.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is we got snow, and then we got rain, and then we got snow, and we got rain. And
right.
We got about four and a half feet of snow up there. But I rake it off. I try to, you know, do what I can to get the ice dams off. But it's got a vaulted ceiling in the place, too. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's not an attic in there, and I don't know what I can do to change it as far as insulation factor or whatever to get rid of those ice dams.
Yeah, it's very difficult. You've got little interstitial spaces, and the ridge vent is the most efficient thing out there. So what's happening is we're drawing warm air out of the cabin, and then we're melting the snow. And, of course, we've had a lot of snow this winter. Winters where we have just shallow snow, we don't get much ice damming. You get 6 inches of snow on the roof. All of a sudden, you've got more insulation, more snow insulation than you have fiberglass. It's unfortunate that we already have a new roof on it, because what we've been discussing here with the energy panels really does work on these manufactured homes with the cathedral ceilings, because you're going over the interstitial space, you're air sealing the complete roof structure, and you're adding insulation. Now, depending upon how big this cabin is, maybe it's still going to make sense. If you're heating this all year round, you may have a tremendous electric or propane bill, and you may find that by adding good insulation and air sealing, that it actually does pay for itself in 10 or 15 years. You're probably going to have to do a little bit of investigation.
What do you? One question I had is, I tried to remedy this with, I went on the internet and I was looking at different solutions to get rid of the ice dams. But one guy said fill the tube sock full of rock salt and put it along, you know, certain places to make, you know, like a little channel, which it is working.
Yeah,
but.
Oh, you can put heat tape over the whole roof. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. But, you know, that's sort of a small Band-Aid on a large wound. And it really,
yes.
It's going to cost you money. I mean, the rock salt, why do we want to dump rock salt in northern Wisconsin near a lake? We really don't want to do things like that. We're having lots of problems with our waterways in Wisconsin with excess salt the way it is. So I think you're going to have to do a little bit of investigating, and then you're going to have to do sort of a cost-benefit analysis, especially if this is a cabin you're using in the winter and you're heating. Even though you've got this nice new roof on there, if it's fairly small, you know, maybe we're going to have to sacrifice the roof so we can get some insulation and air sealing up there.
Yeah, there you go.
It's 28 by 56, so it's not real small. So,
yeah. Well, that's not gigantic, though, and it's simple, right? It's just two slopes and a center ridge. So it's fairly easy to do. It's something that any roofer can do for you. So do a little bit of investigation, but I know you've probably got maybe R13, R11, R19 insulation at best, and you've got a whole lot of air moving out through those cathedral ceilings.
All right. There you go. Well, probably not what you wanted to hear necessarily, but sometimes that's the case. Oh, boy. Teresa in Sparta. Hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
We have about a 20-year-old home that we purchased, and when they constructed it, the north side windows have crankouts, and
mm-hmm.
the south side windows have casement or double hung.
Why would
anyone do that?
You may find that if it's a good quality window, that the casement window has less air exfiltration than does the double hungs. The thing is that with the crank, and then you have that nice lock on the casements, right, where you're actually pulling the sash tight against the weather stripping. So typically what happens is sliding windows leak the most, double hungs are next, casements are really tight, And fixed windows that you can't open are the best. So I think what they did is they went, this is north side, it's really cold. Let's go ahead and put casements in there. South side, yeah, we want the breeze in the summer. Though it's fine there. So they probably actually made an informed choice on that.
The ones that we're cranking out now, at, you know, it was 6 below or however cold it got last night. We have moisture on the interior now around the bottoms of the windows. Is that common, or do we need to replace it?
That's very common. Unless these are really high-performance windows like in Larry's house and you're in a warmer climate, it is extremely common. Now, when a window, I don't know what brand these are, and I don't know how they're holding up, but when you replace these in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, do some research on the glass because, as we said early in the program, there's a 400% difference between the U and R factor of windows depending upon the glass, and you also need to make sure that they are installed correctly so there's no air leaks around them. So before you spend any money on windows, do some research so you know what you're actually getting.
Okay.
Thank you for that question.
Yeah, good luck. Appreciate your call. I can remember spending a lot of money on those windows when they were installed, but now, 7 years later, I'm glad I did. Oh, boy. Jeff, you got a quick question for us. Jeff, are you there?
Yes, I am.
What's on your mind?
Well, I am looking for some information about how to sell my house. House was built in about 1962, and after a few years, the white paint started peeling, revealing that there was lead underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And now what I'm wondering is, all these years later, I'm looking to possibly sell the house,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering what I should do about that lead paint. Should I just paint over it again? Should I put siding on and have that all removed, or what should I do?
You know, I think you should probably talk to a local real estate broker that you trust and ask him or her what is going to affect the value of this house positively. If we put in $20,000 worth of siding, it improves the value $5,000. Is that really worth it? So talk to a real estate professional, a member of the Wisconsin Realtors Association, and they are required by law to give you good advice, and I would start there. So many houses, 90%, 85% of the houses in Wisconsin have lead paint, and the broker is going to say, Jeff, when you do the real estate condition report, you know this, you're going to have to reveal it, but do you just paint the house, you put siding on it, do you just touch it up and let the new owners do it? I don't know. So talk to your real estate professional and get some sage advice from them.
And thanks a lot for calling. And John, thank you so much. Here we are out of time. You'll be back in a couple of months, and we'll do this all over again.
I look forward to it, Larry.
John Freiberger, Wisconsin Registered Home Inspector. His firm is Freiberger & Associates of Madison and Fitchburg. Full disclosure, we should mention that Freiberger Consulting is one of WPR's many business sponsors. So great for that, and great to have him with us today, and he'll be back. Type in his website. Go to educatedhomeowner.net. And he's got lots of good information on educatedhomeowner.net. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.